All right, let's get started. I'd like to call to order the Tacoma Planning Commission meeting for Wednesday, January 4th. Mr. Wong, do we have a quorum?
Yes, you do, and Happy New Year.
Happy New Year. Thank you. I forgot that. Beat me to it again. First up on the agenda, minutes. Approval of minutes from our meeting on December 7th, which included a public hearing. I'll entertain the motion to approve. Somebody has one?
I'll make a motion to approve, but I do have a couple comments.
Sure. And is there seconded?
Second.
Any discussion?
Under discussion, when we talked about the parking requirements for eating and drinking establishments, there was considerable discussion about exempting existing businesses, and then staff pointed out that any building in existence prior to 1996, I believe it was currently exempt. And because of that, that made a big difference. I think all of us then kind of said, okay, let's go with it. I would just like to maybe have reference to that pre-1996 buildings being exempted.
Yeah, definitely. Any further discussion? Comments? All those in favor to approve as amended, say aye.
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 All those opposed, say nay. Minutes are approved. And Malone, you won't have any problems adding.
I will work with. I'll show you the changes.
Okay, great. First up, agenda item number one. Diane.
Hello, Chair Doty and Commissioners. I'm Diane Wyder from Long Range Planning, and I'm here to present again to you the comp plan amendment for the transportation element. That's number 2012-3. We last presented on November 16th and gave you an outline of the updates and technical changes to the mobility master plan section of the transportation element, as well as the changes to the unfunded projects. And I have with me today Liz Castor from Long Range Planning and Jennifer Kammerzell from Public Works, and they're going to assist in this presentation. The first thing I would like to do is introduce our Bike and Pedestrian Action Committee. We have a number of members here. These are the folks who have made so much work actually happen on the ground in the Mobility Master Plan, and they have really worked doing site visits, bicycling all over the city in all kinds of weather, visited intersections, and made the Mobility Master Plan something that is a living document instead of something that's on the shelf. I would like to introduce them. I'm starting with Janet Bissell. Next to her is Janet Higby, Ken Peachy, who is our chair, Chris Seimer, and Don Eisenman. And, well, Bob Myrick isn't actually on the Bike and Pedestrian Action Committee, but he's sort of an honorary hero of all bicycling in Tacoma, so we'll mention him too. So as a review, the proposed changes are in the transportation element. We have very simple text changes to be accurate and consistent with the maps. We have not made any changes to the maps that you've seen in your packet today because it is such an arduous process that until you approve that this will go on for public review, we didn't want the GIS map makers to be changing things back and forth. We are going to update the bicycle priority list in part because there have been many projects that are have gone on the ground and many that are in the planning phases and will be constructed in the spring, so we can shift things around and move things up on the list. A new prioritization in the pedestrian list as well as the intersection list, and then the unfunded project list by Jennifer Kammerzell. So I just wanted this group to know that we really have made an incredible amount of progress since the Mobility Master Plan was approved by the Council in June of 2010. We're approximately 10% of the way towards build-out, and that little chart on the right shows you that a great deal is in the planning phases, the engineering phases, and then when the weather gets good, we'll be on the ground. We have done this in part with energy efficiency and conservation block grant funds, in part with dedicated general funds of $500,000 from 2010 LTGO bonds. And progress has also been made on each of the what are called the five E's, but really end up being the six E's, because equity isn't in the plan, but it really is structural to how we've been considering the plan, and maybe should be added. So we've worked on engineering, and what that means in part is working with public works staff so that everyone is on board, and so that public works staff is thinking in terms of complete streets instead of just in streets for cars. We've done different kinds of education work, including working with Stadium High School, Bike Month, all kinds of encouragement and safety campaigns. We've begun working with law enforcement. We're hoping to do a light bike lights campaign with them starting soon, so that if law enforcement sees a bicyclist riding at night without a light, instead of ticketing them, they give them a bike light and a little note telling them about safety. Evaluation. We have started measuring the number of bicycles in various spots on our bike and ped counts in October. Previously, Public Works could tell you how many cars are moving down the road, but nobody could tell you how many pedestrians or bicycles were moving anywhere. And so we're just starting to develop a baseline for this, and it feels like something that'll be really important as we move forward.
Can you define equity as it's used in this context?
Equity is really geographic equity, so that every neighborhood in this city has good bicycle and pedestrian facilities, and that you can get from any point to any other point safely.
Thanks.
All right, so I'll go through some of the specific changes. These slides should look familiar from when we last presented. On page 16 of your packet, you'll find the updated sidewalk list. In the mobility master plan as it stands now, there was no prioritization of the sidewalks. So we use these criteria, which we discussed at the November 16th meeting, to prioritize the projects. Same thing with the intersections. The intersections were actually broken down into short, medium, and long term, but now you'll see on page 18, we've actually numbered them in a prioritized list. Another thing you should note about the intersections, in the mobility master plan, they had cost estimates that were significantly too low. There were some that were $1,000 for an intersection improvement, which is unfortunately not realistic. So we have changed all of the cost estimates for the intersections to a flat $42,000. We worked with Public Works to figure out that was about the cost to do 8 ADA ramps and then 4 new crosswalks and stop bars. So some intersections will definitely need more in terms of bulb outs or the push buttons for pedestrians, but that's just the baseline figure that we're using. So here's, you can see the difference between the 2010 version for the intersections, where we just had a bulleted list, and then now the update where we actually put them in a chart. They're numbered. So we know if we get $1 million, we'll know exactly what to do. So although the maps in your packet are not updated, we wanted to give you a little preview of what the next 10 bicycle projects will be and what our network will look like. So this is the existing conditions map that's in the mobility master plan now. So this is where we were in 2010. By the end of this summer, we will have completed all of the projects in red. That's been what we've been referring to as the top 4 projects, or the T13, because it's 13 miles. Coming up next, you can see in orange, it just appeared there, will be the North Stevens and Tyler bike lane. There's some existing bike lanes that go south on Tyler and then a little section on Stevens, so that'll make a very important north-south connection. Next, we have a east-west connection here, 47th and 48th. It will connect to our water ditch trail here and then some existing bike lanes. Next is the Puyallup Avenue bike lane that connects to the Tacoma Dome Station, so really the transportation hub for Tacoma. Bike lanes on Orchard are next. This was specifically requested by Public Works. They'll be doing some work on Orchard. So we added this. This was actually a new project that wasn't in the plan. So we added this at their request. Seems like a great connection to the Scott Pearson Trail. And then it'll connect up to the projects on 24th and 26th. Next up is North First Broadway Bike Boulevard, and that will connect to the future Prairie Line Trail. The Nassau Avenue bike lane. So we have a northeast connection there, and this will become more connected in future phases as well. And then the South 11th 12th bike lane, which will go all the way from downtown across the city. 6th Ave Ainsworth here, another just really great connection, so you can get from Gig Harbor across the Narrows Bridge, Scott Pearson Trail, and then go all the way downtown. And then last we have our tree route here, which has been something that everyone's very excited for. It'll be a combination of bike lanes and bike boulevards, really a great north-south connection. And it'll connect to both the Water Ditch Trail and the Scott Pearson Trail, and also to the mall in that area, which is really hard for people to get to at this point.
So this is just informational again. So moving forward, as I mentioned, those six E's pretty much cover a lot of the various different kinds of work we've been doing. Bicycle parking, bike racks, we have a bike locker downtown. Our safety campaigns, we're targeting kind of young people mostly right now, although probably everyone could drive and bike safer. We have our Bike Ped Action Committee who meets monthly, but then goes out on the streets for us much more frequently than that. And their next project is for our top four projects, these 13 miles, we're going to have wayfinding for the first time. We're going to have bike racks and wayfinding. So we're going to have signs that tell you how far you are from downtown and how to get there and where other destinations are. And so they're going to be out on the streets soon, determining at every intersection, you know, where wayfinding signage should go. We're working with a group called Coalition for Active Transportation, which is the first time that Pierce County jurisdictions are sitting down together to talk about active transportation and bicycle connectivity between the jurisdictions and countywide. Safer Routes to School, we have a grant to work with Sheridan Elementary to do both infrastructure improvements as well as programmatic and education with the elementary school kids. So we'll teach them how to cross the street safely. We'll do bike rodeos and all kinds of activities. One day we will close Schuster Parkway, I hope, and have a Sunday Parkways event, which would just be for bikes, pedestrians, skaters, all kinds of fun, partying, hula hoops, whatever, anything, dancing. We'll get Metro Parks, Janet Bissell, to bring her mad skills. We've been doing May Bike Month events for 5 years, I believe, and we'll continue doing those. Those are great community events, lots of support. We work with Pierce Transit. We work with Downtown on the Go in the Chamber and lots of partners. I am the vice chair at the Puget Sound Regional Council's Bicycle and Pedestrian Advisory Committee, and so we work with PSRC to push transportation enhancement investments and greater focus, to have a greater focus on active transportation. And we have so many strategic partnerships. We work with the Health Department, Metro Parks, Pierce Transit, Sound Transit, Downtown on the Go, Chamber. The list goes on. Businesses and other jurisdictions. So that's what we've been up to, supporting the many action items that are in the Mobility Master Plan section.
Scott, you have a question?
Yeah, I just had a question. Safety, are the use of helmets, is that part of the safety education program? And do you partner with anybody in working on that?
Yeah, so we're actually hoping in the next month that there will be a new campaign hitting the streets that's specifically about the lights and the helmets. So we'll be doing ads on buses, bus shelters, like Diane mentioned, working with the police hopefully to hand out lights and then posters and things. We worked with Rusty George on the campaign. It's very witty. So
oh, it's very fun and catchy. Mm-hmm. And it's a law. It's the law to wear a helmet here. Mm-hmm. But it's in practice. It doesn't happen all the time.
Mm-hmm. And we are hoping to work with some of the bike shops as well on the helmet campaign to see if we can do discounts or something during the campaign.
For the top 10 identified, you know, next projects, have you are those secured funding, or are you still looking to get funding sources for one or all of those projects?
We would like funding sources for all of those projects. The funds that we currently have are going to all be used up on the top four projects, and so we will have to seek more funding.
Has the council, I mean, I commend you guys for the work in the advisory committee and the partnerships that you seem to be reaching out. Has the council authorized or blessed you to be going out and talking to Transportation Choices or talking to the state legislature to talk about infrastructure funding, you know, proposals or protection of the state funds that we currently get or new ideas?
We have their blessing to go out and seek grant funding, mm-hmm. but Randy Lewis is our lobbyist, and so I believe it's on his agenda for this legislative session. There's, you know, the budget is such a huge issue that this has, I think, fallen down somewhat, but we have a great deal of support from the council to move forward and seek grant funding.
Great. Any other questions, comments?
I've got just one more. I looked at Seattle's bike master plan, and you know, I think that there's some things that you can learn from that. And one of the things that I haven't seen on here, and I wasn't at the November 17th proposal. You know, I love the wayfinding idea. I'm excited about what you guys are doing there. And I believe in Seattle's code, they at least encourage in their master plan private development, incentivize with zoning and floor area ratios, bonuses for providing wayfinding stations and bike repair stations and, you know, amenities and seat. Do we have that similar type of policy in our master plan?
There are some for like accommodating bicycles, bike racks, but we don't have that for wayfinding. And what was the other thing you mentioned?
Like the bicycle repair stations.
Oh, and yeah. We don't have any of that.
Seattle's, in my understanding of Seattle's code, is that it's not an automatic incentive, but for private developments, residential developments, or mixed-use developments, if they provide those sort of pedestrian accommodations, public pedestrian accommodations, it can incentivize their floor area ratios or give them more development flexibility. And I think that when you're buying a public good and, you know, getting something out of a private development, that makes it a more lively and, you know, place for pedestrians and bicyclists and a place to make it more complete streets and friendly, I think that's a great idea. So I don't know if that's something that we may need to look at in if we ever look at mixed-use centers again or downtown downtown zoning again. But I think it's something to consider.
Right, it would have to be part of a regulatory code amendment for 2013.
I know that we do have certain incentives in our mixed-use centers. None of those specific things that you just mentioned, but those are good ideas.
Yeah, I guess then my call, if you guys are interested in that, is taking a look at seeing if the advisory committee would be willing to take a look at some of those things and see if they could come up with some ideas that potentially might be something we could put on the agenda in the future.
I think that's a great idea. It's an idea that I've tossed around a bit, is to do basically a code update having to do with active transportation.
Well, I think, you know, you guys have done amazing work, and it's awesome to see, you know, not that long ago this was just kind of an idea on, hey, you know, Tacoma's really caters to the car, how about we fix that? And I think in a couple of years we've come a really long way. So
thank you.
Great job. Appreciate it.
And now Jennifer Camarzella is here to talk about the unfunded project list.
So specifically just the the last page that's in the handout for the 2012-3 packet that you got. Every year, Public Works presents or provides you with a list of unfunded projects to add to the unfunded project list of the transportation elements. What we do is we, as part of our six-year program, transportation program, outreach or amendment process, we, in addition to asking for projects that we were looking for that have funding or funding opportunities, we also ask for neighborhoods, either priority projects, whether they're funded or not, or if they're just kind of more conceptual. This year, they actually, each neighborhood council was asked to update their neighborhood action strategies. They did that exercise earlier this year with Elton Gatewood. And what they did, what we did, is instead of having them go through that process again to figure out what their priorities are, is we pulled out all of their transportation projects, priority projects, from their action strategies. And what is currently in the unfunded project list are, there is a section, it's called Neighborhood Action Strategies, and those are their previous transportation priority projects. So what we did is they went through, determined, they didn't delete any, but they did have quite a few to add. We actually are adding 26 new unfunded projects. The South Tacoma and New Tacoma Neighborhood Council apparently did not participate, or they did not actually they participated, they did not have any transportation priority projects. They included recreational, some were business, some were economic development, so they included a couple of different kinds of priority projects, but transportation was not part of that. So what you see in front of you are the 26 projects that we're proposing to add. A couple are revisions of existing projects, whether they're adding length to it or they're changing the scope. Most of them are road projects. You'll see that they range between pedestrian improvements, ADA improvements, vehicular access, lots of traffic calming, more along the lines of complete streets. And what we do is, in order to be eligible for grant funding or even to move into the six-year transportation program, projects are, if they follow the process correctly, are supposed to be in the comprehensive plan transportation element first. And within this element, there is a criteria on how you move a project forward. And it's based on a specific criteria, funding, accident history, council priorities, policies within the comp plan. And then from there, what we do is we technically would pull projects from the unfunded list into the six-year program and pursue funding or construction or implementation of those projects. So we've met with Environment and Public Works has seen this project list. They just kind of nod towards it and acknowledge that we've done some outreach with the neighborhood council, but they recognize that this is independent from the six-year program. So this will be the first time that they actually adopted into the comp plan. So I'd be happy to answer any questions if you have any.
Questions? Comments?
I just have a comment in terms of, you know, one of the things we're also looking at is this South Downtown Master Plan, the Project Action SEPA, and it seems, picking up on Commissioner Morrison's comments earlier, I think there's a tremendous opportunity there since many of these infrastructural improvements are within that area, just looking back over some of the maps, to use that as a mechanism as development comes in over the next 20 or 30 years to fund some of these. I mean, I think we all anticipate federal and state funding is going to decline probably for the next 3, 4, 5 years. But anyway, looking at, I mean, that's a big, big area, and it's going to accommodate a tremendous amount of development, and it's focused development. So I think there is that opportunity. So pass it.
Just a comment. I think I mentioned this last time, but I think this McKinley Hill to downtown Tacoma complete sidewalks one is just a great idea, because if you go up there by McKinley Park, only one side of the street is has a sidewalk, but it's right adjacent to like the Tacoma Dome and the new LeMay Auto Museum, and so there are frequently people parking there, like visitors from out of town, and you can see where people have walked, and they've just like worn a trail in the dirt and the weeds. And I think, you know, if we had a sidewalk there, I think that would go a long way towards increasing people's opinion of Tacoma, maybe bring more people in. And I think that's a great idea as far as the proposed projects. I mean, they're all great ideas, but just want to mention that.
Great.
Excuse me. So the recommendation is to have sidewalk on both sides.
I believe so. I mean, it's the description's not real clean, but I mean, if you go out there, you'd clearly see it.
And what's listed as a description is really just kind of their basic idea. We don't do a lot of design or conceptual. It's really just conceptual. We don't really even do a cost estimate. But if it comes down to, you know, well, hey, we can add something else in addition to sidewalks to it, we'll consider expanding. And a lot of this, too, will go back to the neighborhood councils that requested it and kind of really narrow down what's their vision, what do they want to see out there. So, yeah, definitely.
Well, everything goes through the complete streets process now, right?
Mm-hmm. It goes through the dirt.
Dirt.
Designing.
Design integration review team.
Great. Any other comments, questions?
Then we are here tonight seeking your approval of the draft changes.
I'm sorry. I was missing that. Yeah, so I guess I'll entertain a motion to approve the staff report and draft changes and propose distribution for public review.
And make a motion to approve.
Is there a second?
Second.
Moved and seconded. Any discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
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 All those opposed say nay. Moving on.
Thank you all very much.
Thank you very much for your hard work.
Thank you.
He gets to work. Skills into my presentation. That'd be pretty good.
He gets to work on the fun stuff.
The
All right, next up, agenda item GB2, large scale retail. Proposed code amendments. Brian, and you are seeking our approval and moving this to City Council, correct?
Absolutely. Thank you, Chair, Vice Chair, Commissioners. Brian Boudet with the City's Long-Range Planning Division, and as the Chair mentioned, the purpose for this discussion today is hopefully to finalize the Planning Commission's review and make its recommendation to the City Council regarding the large-scale retail code amendments. As you know, this is in response to a moratorium that was initially adopted by the City Council and provided to you to provide recommendations back to them. What you have in the packet is the draft recommendation letter as well as the findings and recommendations report, which includes as exhibits the draft code amendments as well as the map, which is a map you'd already seen. It's the same map that went out in the public review packet, really identifying the three different areas of the city in which these code amendments would apply differently. So the recommendation letter just highlight a couple things. I think there were, and this is in large part in response to the discussion that the Commission had at the last meeting about what modifications that you would like to see before this was forwarded on for City Council review. In the letter, and this is also reflected in the findings and recommendations, two things that I think were brought up that were really, really are, I think, important to communicate as part of this process is the piece about the community interest in these projects and the real desire for public notice, public input opportunities for these sorts of very significant large-scale projects, and really recognizing that while these may be appropriate in certain areas, they're not automatically so, and there really is some additional review necessary, largely because of how just the sheer size of these things and how significant they are once they go into an area that they, in many ways by themselves, significantly define what an area might look like or how it might develop for decades. And if you don't, basically, if you don't get them right, it's hard to get anything else right. I guess I would put it that way. So I think we added some information in the recommendation letter and in the findings about that. I think it was a really good comment. And then the other one in there is what I think the Commission has said numerous times about, you know, the moratorium process is limiting from a time perspective, and there's only so much that can be done here. You know, there is a positive improvement being made under this recommendation, you know, for this process and the ability for the city to review things and the community to hear about them. But at the same time, there is, I think, in the Commission's eye, it sounds like a recognition that there really could be more done particularly when you get to the community and urban mixed-use centers, that there is more analysis and more work that, that should be done there to look at the design and development standards, and particularly how they relate to some of these larger-scale developments and larger-scale properties that don't fit maybe quite in the mold of certainly at least what the neighborhood mixed-use centers and a lot of the design and development standards originally created for those, you know, that they don't translate across perfectly. So some additional work needed, and essentially just recognizing that and recommending to the council that that's really something that the commission looks forward to and hopes to continue working on in the future.
That in and of itself is a huge project. I mean, I know when we're going to the mixed-use centers, these community centers were always, what do we do with them? You know? You know, in a perfect world, we kind of wanted them to be more like neighborhood mixed-use centers, but you know, it's always a struggle. So I don't know how when this does come back, it's going to be it's a difficult challenge.
It is, yeah. I think absolutely, it's a big project. And like I said at the last meeting, the difference between where you are and where you want to be is so much more significant than it is in the neighborhood centers. That the approach of how you get there is probably realistically much different as well. So.
Yeah.
I'm not going to go through the findings and recommendations report. It addresses many of those similar types of things, and obviously it goes through the process that you all participated in, the public review, the sorts of comments that you heard, and really the basic justification for why the commission feels that the approach that you're proposing is really the best one, given the time constraints and the moratorium realities. So I just wanted to go through the code really quick. There was a number of changes in there, and I tried to highlight all of those in yellow for you so you could, it would be really obvious what things were done between the last version that you saw and, well, basically the one that went out for public review and then the one that is being forwarded to the city council. The first piece there being the notification distance. We talked about that at the last meeting. So the notification distance now would be the same for the pre-application community meeting and for the public hearing that would be held for conditional use permit for these large-scale retail uses, both at the 1,000 feet. The other one, and then I'm on page 2, sorry, of the code amendments. The other one you'll see there is, I highlighted the word no under city council. That was just an inadvertent error where when we initially sent it out, it said that the conditional use permit would go to city council directly for final decision, and that's not how conditional use permits are done. So then moving on towards the end there on page 8 is 8 and 9 is where the real meat of the changes are. We had a lot of discussion at the last meeting about the issue of how the standards would apply to the existing large retailers, or in particular this idea of an existing one that wants to modify in some form or fashion, and in particular the one that expands themselves but doesn't expand the building, I guess. Mm-hmm. I'll say. And so the first sentence there that's highlighted at the end of number 2 talks about this idea of, well, it basically wouldn't apply unless the modification that you're doing either involves what is considered a major modification currently per our code, which is the 10% building increase that we talked about. So that would be one trigger. The other one would be that if you weren't meeting that one but you were expanding the use, so this is the within the building scenario, that's where the 50% trigger comes in. So if you currently have a 50,000 square foot large retail use in a building and you want to increase it by 60,000 square feet into the other portion of the building or something like that, or take up a whole bunch of little guys and expand it in that way without any building expansion, there is a point there at which you would be considered a significant modification and would trigger that. It's probably relatively unlikely in truth, but at least there is that recognition that in some cases that sort of a change would also be significant enough.
So the kind of modification that was discussed with a commenter at the last meeting would be below this threshold. So
that's true. Yeah, he was talking about, I think, 80,000 to 100,000, so that'd be 25% expansion. So
yeah.
Assuming he wasn't in any way doing outward expansions of the building beyond 10%, could do that, yes, without any conditional use permit review. The next one that's highlighted there, and I think in this it's tied together with that, was, I think, a recognition that many of the criteria that we have are much more so applicable to a brand-new development. And the idea of saying, well, you're doing a 10% addition or you're doing some expansion, like the Kmart example that was brought up, and saying, well, you have to add five new buildings in the middle of the parking lot to break it up, or you have to structure the parking, and some of those points get a little awkward to actually apply. And so we tried to just cover that with by making this sort of general statement that, you know, we recognize that under these sort of remodel and addition situations that some of these criteria are not fully realistic, and that the hearing examiner would exercise some discretion essentially in how those criteria applied to be reasonable for those sorts of projects. So the next two are issues that were brought forward at the last meeting, I believe, by Commissioner Beal, who's not here, but one was about limiting, you know, usually one of the methodologies, I guess, for reducing the impact of the off-street parking areas is simply to limit the amount of off-street parking provided. So that it recognizes that one. And then in the next one, under sort of the idea of contributing positively to the concept of what the mixed-use centers would be, the low-impact development techniques is included in there. And the last one is at the bottom of that page, and this, another good issue I think that was brought up at the last meeting was the idea of signage for the pre-application community meeting. So we added in there a requirement that the applicant would have to put up a notification sign, or maybe multiple if it's a big site, but notification signs at the, at the site 14 days in advance to make sure that the neighborhood was aware of the pre-application community meeting. So we already do those signs, those kind of signs for the public hearing. That's the yellow ones you see all over the place. You know, we put those up for the public hearing, but we don't really have these pre-application community meetings really in the code. So this one adds that requirement in there for that as well. So I think, again, another really good modification. So with that, we tried to capture as much of the process here. And I think the reasoning behind the Planning Commission's really good discussions, and I'm certainly open to any questions you have.
A quick question. On the signage that you put up, I've seen small plastic ones. Some cities put up 4x4 type signs. Seems to me that they should really be predicated upon the type of exposure. If you're in a car moving fairly quickly, you need something larger so you don't, particularly on avenues where you can't get out of the car easily and walk up and read what it says. Does the city provide some variation as to the type of signage here?
Yeah, we actually have two different signs. One is 2 square feet, I think, and one's 2 foot by, or one's 3 foot by 4 foot, and one's 1 foot by 2 foot, or something to that effect. Anyways, some of it depends on the type of permit you do, and I think at some level there is some discretion involved in, like you say, I mean, the reality is, and this is true in the other places of the code, it talks about it being clearly visible, so there is a consideration to, well, what's it going to realistically take to make sure this thing is visible in the size and the type of information you put on it and where you locate, you know, all those sorts of things. So we didn't specify exactly how big it had to be, but I think that's the case in other situations in the code, and it hasn't been a problem, I guess.
Okay, thank you. So are we commenting on everything or just the changes?
Everything.
I did have a comment, and I think Commissioner Morrison shared this previously, and it's the wording in the letter of transmittal. I kind of take umbrage when it says the council is directing the commission to do things. I mean, we're an independent body. We make recommendations and advise the council. If the council doesn't like our recommendations, they're required to hold a separate public hearing, for example. And so I would suggest, rather than using the word directed, maybe urged or use the word requested, the commission to focus its review on. I think from a public standpoint, reading that, it sounds like we're being told by the council what to do. I think the council can urge and suggest to us that we consider things, but I think we're an independent body and make independent recommendations.
So I guess I'm just looking back at the ordinance. Here's the language they used. So whereas the City Council has determined that the Commission should focus its study on size limitations.
Yeah, that sounds better.
Should.
Better focus. Than direct. Directing us to. And you could do that without changing the last page, so by the end of the meeting you could still get Jeremy Doty's signature.
Except it's on the back of the first page, actually, because we got to save paper.
Always on.
So you changed directed to revise or
requested
or
advised,
requested,
yeah,
suggested,
advised or something like that. Yeah,
called for.
It's not a big deal to me, but
I understand your concern.
Suggested, whatever.
Requested?
Requested.
And I'm accused from the substance of this, but I concur. I concur with the procedural.
Which one?
I would make a motion to send this the amendment language regarding the big box or large scale retail onto the county council, city council for consideration.
I'd second it.
Moved and seconded. Is there any discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed say nay. And the ayes have it and one recusal. Six.
I was going to
make
5 o'clock.
Thank you.
No, thank you.
Good work within the next tight time frame.
I can.
All right. Yeah, I think this could be a quickest meeting on record. I don't know what to do with myself right now. Acknowledge receipt of communication item C1, community meeting, planning for future of the MLK district. And Luan, I believe you have something you probably want to say about that. But it'd be great if some commissioners could make it to that. I will not be able to make it, but hopefully somebody can. Comments by long range planning.
Let's make this a record short meeting. Unless Brian can talk for 15 minutes.
No.
I'll have Brian talk about this meeting tomorrow night. Brian, please.
Yeah, thank you. So I know there were a couple of commissioners at the community meeting that we had for the South Downtown Subarea Plan. We talked about this just briefly a few months ago, and we will be doing a more significant presentation with you here in the next couple of months on this project. But this is very much the same concept, very much the same type of process that we're looking at for MLK. You will recall through much of the mixed-use centers discussion from a couple of years ago, there was much outcry for master planning was the term used at the time, but for more focused planning in some of these areas of the city. These are the two areas that the city went out and got grant funding to support that sort of subarea planning in, both South Downtown and MLK. So this is the one neighborhood center that we're moving forward with as a focus for how we can utilize both subarea planning and area-wide environmental review to promote growth and development in these mixed-use centers. So the document I handed out to you is just really a summary sheet that we've been providing to the public here for the last month or so, giving a brief overview of the concept of what subarea planning might do. It's a long process. It's about 18 months or so. You will certainly be heavily involved in that. Everything that we do will be coming through the Planning Commission, and you'll be making a recommendation to the City Council probably at the beginning of 2013 or so on what the final subarea plan should look like and the environmental impact statement that goes along with that. The phase we're at right now is really just the initiation of this process, and starting out with letting people know that, hey, this is what we're going to be looking at. We got some money. We want to work with the community on it. The scoping phase is the next significant piece. That will be starting within the next week and runs for a little more than a month, and that is sort of the first official technical piece of the environmental review process, is really identifying what the significant issues are that the community wants to make sure get addressed through the environmental review and subarea planning process. So this meeting is really just an explanation to the community of, hopefully, to build a little excitement, truthfully, of, hey, this is what's going on. We want people to be involved. Please stay engaged. These are the sorts of opportunities that we will have. We will be sending out notice shortly, and please make sure that folks are part of that initial phase of the process and really continue on through that over the next year to 18 months. So,
is this pretty much identical to the program that's being run at South Downtown as well, run parallel to it, or?
Yeah, they're very much hand in hand, very much the same sort of process. Both are subarea plan plus environmental impact statement projects. The South Downtown is a little bit longer time frame. It's through the end of 2013, whereas this one is about a year shorter than that. The But overall, it's basically the same concept, and the intent is essentially the same in both cases, to try to look at ways in which the city can utilize the process both from a marketing perspective to build some interest in these areas that something is happening, as well as hopefully to do some of the initial analysis and study of what it will take to develop in these areas to remove some of the barriers from private development coming in. So what is the infrastructure needs and what are strategies in which we can try to meet those over a time period that can encourage the sort of growth we're looking for.
Has MultiCare and the folks at St. Joe's, besides being property owners, have they committed to, you know, hand-in-hand working very closely?
Yeah, that's a good question. So we have what we're calling a working group that's put together. Really, it is representatives of, like, the Central Neighborhood Council, New Tacoma Neighborhood Council, the Business District, a lot of the, you know, the Ministerial Alliance and a lot of the other organizations that operate up there. Both St. Joe's and MultiCare have committed and we have representation on that working group, and so that's very exciting from an opportunity perspective. I think everyone recognizes that they are the two elephants in the room, and there is all the, you know, the continuing discussion about the medical mile. That term gets thrown around a lot, and what exactly that means is a big question mark, especially for folks that live in the area. A lot of people hear the term and think that means that it's just a big office park, which is certainly not the idea. But yeah, absolutely, they are on board, and we are continuing to work to foster that relationship and continue that.
Even back when we're in the mixed use discussions, this one always gave me concern. The strip fashion of, because I've always saw three distinct. You know, you could draw three lines through this, and the concerns and the needs of that district are, you know, really different. And
sure.
I'm sure you're going to get into that. It'll be challenging, almost more so than the other one, I think.
Yeah, it could be. In some ways, there is a understood character of what I think MLK, it will be bigger and all of that than what it currently is, but there's a concept for what MLK be at some level based on what the current reality is. In South Downtown, it's closer to a blank slate, which means there's more to do and less to do, maybe all the same. It's probably less controversial, but there's more to do.
Yeah.
Whereas in MLK, it's probably a little bit more controversial because you have lots of existing folks. But
it'll be fine. I look forward to it.
We've actually got it in four areas. You can see on the back of the notice. I gave you guys a copy of the notice, too. So you've got the TG, you got the Tacoma General Mary Bridge campus basically at the north end, then you've got the whole core business district area, then you've got St. Joe's, and then you have sort of the forgotten end of MLK, which is 19th South, which is actually a huge area.
Absolutely.
Mostly single family right now, which is particularly interesting to talk about how that relates to the district, I think, which most people would think of between Division and 19th. So,
Hey, Brian.
Yeah.
Just a quick question on the time of the meeting. On one hand, one handout says 4 to 7, and the other one says 5 to 7.
That's always good. okay. Sure, change that one. It's 5 o'clock.
It's 5 o'clock.
5 o'clock. Yes. Thank you.
That's just want people to show up early.
Only if they'll help set up.
I know the University of Idaho students have done some planning and some design for MLK area, and there was huge community interest at the time. I remember the place was just packed. Mm. So, I mean, that's always a good sign. There was one Tacoma Public Utilities gentleman in the room who said, "There's no way you can do that because the power is running right down all those alleys," and he basically got booed out of the room. but the reality is there are major infrastructure concerns of these areas that that you know really want to build out, but you know.
Yeah, I mean, it's one of the, you know, Commissioner Morrison alluded to it a little bit, although it was about, you know, transportation funding, but there is a reality to growing in urban areas that it's not easy, especially in old urban areas. There is old infrastructure, and there are the realities of how things used to be done that don't necessarily work well with how development likes to operate these days. I mean, Big Box is a good example of that. So,
not impossible, though. It just may take longer.
Yeah. There's been a lot of good efforts up there. The University of Idaho stuff was one of them. We are a huge piece of this process is to coalesce all of those various components into hopefully one document that everybody can rally behind and everybody can support for the next 20 years. as a vision concept for how we move forward. We're also working closely, in similar to how we are with the South Downtown Project with the University of Washington Tacoma. They are really interested in the MLK area and see that as part of their expanded neighborhood, I guess, or area of impact, or, you know, they're not looking at moving there or anything, but, you know, sort of really see that as part of the broader area that they operate in and are interested in that as well. So we have Brian Boyd, who's here, who's an intern, started today, as a matter of fact, a senior with the University of Washington Tacoma Urban Studies program, is going to be helping on this project as well as the South Downtown one. So
I was just wondering if that University of Idaho project, is that ongoing, or is that...
No, it was just a student project. I think they were junior year or something.
Okay.
Yeah, so yeah, it's probably 2 years ago or three years. It's two to three years ago, something like that.
3 years ago, they did a South Tacoma, and then 2 years ago.
Yeah,
yeah, they did a McKinley 1 year. Yeah, they came back for 3 or 4 years in a row and picked different areas of town and did some study work on them. It was really cool stuff. They haven't been back in a couple of years. We need to push on that one again, but...
They got funding from some folks in Seattle. So,
they went up there. Defected.
You don't pay enough, Ryan. Takes more than bottled water.
Oh, that's right.
You know, I talked to Peter about that the first year they came down. They said there's nothing. Yeah, see what Tom can do at that time. But I don't know. I want to think about it.
Well, it's one of those things I think we hope, in a general sense, as the UWT grows and expands its programs, resources, et cetera, that those are the kind of things that the city would be able to partner with all the more in the future. I mean, I think we're exploring that today with the Urban Studies program and how better we can utilize the, you know, partner, as we would both probably benefit from those. We don't have an architecture school down here, so we won't get that same component like they would in Seattle, but maybe someday we'll see.
I'm on the advisory board for the Urban Studies program at UWT, and I think that sentiment is reciprocal. There's the chancellor is having a kind of summit of advisory boards for UWT. I think it's Friday the 13th. Good date. But it's kind of interesting because I don't know if you've met her, speak. She's pretty dynamic, but. She has a lot of focus on integrating what UWT does with kind of what's going on in Tacoma and kind of what the vision is for the city. So it'll be interesting to see what, if anything, comes out of that.
Yeah, we very much have heard those same things, and that's part of why I say the UW has really stepped forward to try to be an even bigger partner than we probably initially thought on the MLK piece. And we have pitched similarly. I think there may be some classes or capstone projects coming out in the next 6 months to a year or so that could relate to one or both of these sub-area planning projects, and it's something we're definitely looking at, you know, really promoting, because we got a really good opportunity right now to get some folks involved in a very specific thing that can, you know, help them as well as, I think, play into the community's, you know, input on these projects.
Yeah. Well, I think it's fantastic. I mean, from a planning perspective, I think we can lay the groundwork for a lot of this stuff to happen, but I don't think it really builds the interest that really need. And so when you start to visualize and you see, you know, just wow, that, you know, that could be, I mean, that really starts to feed on itself. I think it's
absolutely
invaluable. So
some of it's just keeping it going.
looking at the scoping for I went to the scoping meeting for the South Downtown.
Yeah.
And they explained that, you know, they've got the land use section or element that they're going to consider. But I think it's an option. I think aesthetics are a key element, particularly when you're dealing with these macro projects. And the concern there was how you come into the downtown, whether you see the old downtown from the freeway, the old Kevin Lynch view from the road. These are important considerations as to how people view the city. And likewise, at the micro scale, I mean, the whole success of these kinds of big projects is how these developments are going to interact with the street and these multimodal transportation systems. Mm-hmm. So I think that's going to be an important consideration, because basically when you do these types of plans, you're not going to do individual environmental impacts on the smaller pieces. You're doing it for the whole thing. So I think it's really important to take a look at that as well.
Yeah, absolutely.
Comments by commissioners? Move to adjourn.
So moved. So moved.